are 15 to 20 million
I am your future.
You have the power.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We're our national leader.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here broadcasting in southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, and northern Delaware. However, people all over the USA, in fact, all over the world, can listen in simply by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link. And as always, in my travels, people tell me they listen in, not only live, but they also have the opportunity to put it on in their car. They also use it while they're doing their emails. They're keeping up with some of the important things that we're talking about. And I'm going to discuss today about the national media and how they've been, you know, using up our time, our energy to talk about nonsense, you know, and while the backroom deals continue and America's falling apart for years and years, they've been worrying about saving the world and hell with the American people. Our panel members are all on board, and they include Mark Andel, as you know, the founder of the Made in America store. And this man has a story which is unbelievable. Everybody loves Mark. Thank you, Mark, for your unbelievable participation. Larkin Connolly never ceases to amaze me. He is in studio with us here today and ready to go. He's up on his laptop. He's got his headset on. And Larkin is a wild man, as always. As you know, he's a small business advocate and a SCORE mentor. And Rich Logis, principal of RJL Technology Integration. And of course, Rich, I want you to send me those pictures in email as well so that I can share them with some of my family and friends. Henry Chaplinsky is our engineer, and our guest today is going to be Curtis Ellis. Now, you know, every week we try to inform our supporters during the broadcast of our efforts to expand opportunities for our fellow Americans and really to encourage businesses to not only expand their American-made product lines, but also go out of their way to open new product lines that will compete with all the stuff that's overwhelming our stores that's made in everywhere but America. I noticed even children's storybooks and learning books are now printed outside of the USA, which is disappointing because, you know, as children leave those books on their bookshelves, they have the opportunity to look when they get bigger. They look, where is it printed? Nothing that represents the USA. It's been a challenge, guys, I want to tell you, but I want to thank you also for being so dedicated to our cause. The national media does not like movements like ours, mainly because we bring attention to the fact that America became the sales point for foreign-made products, and our supporters who represent tens of millions of America's consumers want that to change. A man who has been helping to make that change possible is with us today, and I want to welcome him, and that is Curtis Ellis. And then I am going to ask Curtis to welcome the questions. It's open forum today, so say whatever is on your mind, and let's, you know, put it on the record.
Well, it's great to be here. Thank you very much, and thank you for everything you're doing to raise awareness and raise this crucial issue. You talk about foreign-made products, products made overseas, competing with American products. And we have two prime examples right in our backyard. One of them's right in your backyard in Philadelphia. The other's not in our backyard. It's in our laundry room. Right now, just last week, on Thursday, the International Trade Commission issued a ruling declaring that washing machine imports, washing machines made by Samsung and LG, two South Korean companies, are harming our domestic appliance industry, particularly Whirlpool. Whirlpool is the biggest appliance maker, biggest American made a manufacturer. They bought Maytag. A lot of the household names over the last several decades have been incorporated under the Whirlpool name. Now, Whirlpool employs 15,000 Americans. 4,000 of them work right in Clyde, Ohio, making washing machines in this one factory in Clyde, Ohio. Now, over the decades, what Samsung and LG have done is deliberately price their washing machines below the cost of production and sell them in the United States for less than it costs to manufacture them. This is what John D. Rockefeller used to do over 100 years ago to drive the competitors to Standard Oil out of business. He'd underprice his oil cheaper than what it cost to produce it until they went out of business. Then he could jack the price up and make his money back again. It's illegal practice. It's illegal in the United States. It's illegal under international trade law, but nobody cares about international trade law, really, on the world stage. Well, the ITC ruled that Samsung and LG were doing this, manufacturing their products in Mexico and South Korea, underpricing them and selling them in the U.S., and it imposed a tariff, a countervailing duty to make up for the price difference. So what did Samsung and LG do? They moved production to China. They stopped making them in Mexico and South Korea. They moved them in China and thereby evaded the tariffs, because the tariff was placed on goods imported from washing machines imported from Mexico and South Korea. So they moved to China. The ITC responded, found the same, they were doing the same thing, and put a tariff on the goods made in China. So then Samsung and LG moved production to Vietnam and Thailand. Well, finally, they were playing whack-a-mole. You knock them out of here, they pop up somewhere else. So finally, last Thursday, the International Trade Commission, a branch of the U.S. government, ruled that no matter where these are coming from, they're harming our domestic industry. So now President Trump has the authority to impose tariffs or quotas or some kind of countervailing duty on these machines, no matter where they're made. And, you know, the problem here is not just limited to Whirlpool and not just limited to Samsung and LG. This happens in industry after industry after industry. Look, first of all, Samsung and LG are not creatures of the free market. They get special favors from the South Korean government. They get low-interest loans. They get tax treatment. They get special favors. They're a crony capitalist operation. In China, it's even more blatant, where you have state-owned enterprises and enterprises owned by the Chinese Red Army, the military. You've got special children of the Communist Party that own these so-called private entities. And they're all getting special favors, low-interest loans. They get energy below. They get free energy from the state. And they use that to deliberately underprice and sell goods in this country for below what it costs to make. The great example with China is the aluminum industry. They've got vast aluminum mines in western China that are, and the smelters for smelting the aluminum ore are set up right next to a coal mine. And the coal comes out of the ground, goes into the furnace for the smelter, and what comes out the other end are aluminum ingots, which the company has not bought electricity on the open market. They get the coal right out of the ground. Anyway, they sell that aluminum in this country for below what it costs to produce. It's driven our aluminum industry and aluminum smelters clean out of business. We've lost dozens of aluminum smelters, and these are in places like Ohio, Eastern Washington, places where there aren't other jobs to take up the slack. So when people are thrown out on the street because their jobs have been driven into extinction by unfair, predatory, illegal foreign competition, there's no place to go. There's no place to work. And so Whirlpool And these washing machines made by Samsung and LG are really the tip of the iceberg. They're an example of an ongoing practice we see in industry after industry after industry. China has targeted the auto parts industry. They want global market share. They want to own that industry on a global scale. They're using NAFTA and the Korea Free Trade Agreement and deals like that to ship auto parts made in China into Mexico, and then Mexico incorporates them in cars made in Mexico, and they're sold in the United States duty-free, tariff-free, tax-free. Whereas if you make an auto part in Pennsylvania, you're paying property taxes, you're paying sales taxes, you're paying Social Security taxes, and you're paying income taxes. So we're being forced, American businesses and American workers are being forced to compete against these foreign entities which have unfair advantage, basically getting tax-free treatment courtesy of our current tax code, which is completely corrupted by the big money global corporations that are making out like bandits on this stuff while we take it in the neck. And just one last thing I want to say on this. This is not an exercise in economics 101. This is not simply some type of green eye shade discussion, academic discussion. This has real world and very lethal consequences. The National Bureau of Economic Research and the National Institutes of Health have done studies and have documented when the unemployment rate goes up, what also goes up in a corresponding fashion is alcoholism, liver disease, and drug overdoses. It is no accident that we now are in an epidemic of drug overdoses, heroin type overdoses, 64,000 last year. That's more people than died in all of the terrorist attacks in our history. 64,000 people in 1 year. And most of those overdoses are concentrated in the very areas where we see jobs destroyed by this cheap foreign competition. So China is stealing our jobs and literally killing our people through these predatory trade practices. Now, the media does not report on this. They talk about the opioid crisis like it just came out of heaven or something. They do not report on the causes. They do not report on how people are literally, American people are literally drinking and drugging themselves to death because they've been stripped of their jobs, stripped of their hope, stripped of opportunity. They're unable to support their families. They're stripped of their pride because the only happiness that comes in life, happiness comes from the success that we earn. And if you cannot earn a living and earn the what it takes to support your family, you have no pride, you have no happiness. And so, you know, we have these discussions about Made in America, and people think, well, you know, what's that about? It's like, whatever, doesn't matter. No, you understand, and I believe many of your listeners understand, this is a life and death matter. Life and death, not just of the economy. It is literally life and death of the American people. We must have jobs. We must have industries. We must have opportunities for our children. Otherwise, they will succumb to hopelessness, and the byproducts of hopelessness are alcoholism, drug abuse, every kind of abuse. It's really, I just cannot emphasize that this is not an economic argument. This is a very human survival discussion we're having.
Curtis, I want to tell you something. You are absolutely right. And I'll give you just a very brief report on some of my dealings with tourists that come to historic Philadelphia from outside of America. They're also surprised that there is so much alcoholism, drug abuse, unemployment in America. You know, for years, people thought that America had their streets with gold pavements. today when they come and they see what's going on, they say, wow, that was the way it was in communist times. People drank, they were disgusted. Today, people have a new idea because they have jobs, they have futures, they have hope. They, you know, they have reality upon them, and the reality in most cases is good. You're right. And the national news media has wasted our time. Instead of them talking about all of the backroom deals that have really hurt the American people from A to Z, they've just been playing, worrying about all kind of foolishness that really doesn't mean anything to us. And now I have for open forum, Mr. Larkin Connolly, sitting in the studio.
Yes, I came up here to defend my Pittsburgh Steelers. Allow me to begin my defense by saying, using all digits on both of your hands, which would include your thumbs, it takes two hands to wear all of the Super Bowl rings that we've won in the wonderful city of Pittsburgh. I might also add to this that the Pittsburgh Steelers sit down and win the Super Bowl every 7 years, whether they want to or not. Every 7 years, the Steelers win the Super Bowl. Nobody's won more Super Bowls than they have. And if you think the Pittsburgh Steelers are out of this season, 3-2 in the beginning of the season, you don't know the Steelers. They'll be there at the playoffs. And all I do now is sit with bated breath waiting to see at what juncture during the NFL season the Eagles are going to break my heart.
And that is exactly what Larkin is doing. He's waiting with bated breath to see what our national leaders are going to do to address this crisis. I like this tariff, talked about.
Well, let me make a couple comments about that, because it gets pretty tenuous. Good morning, Mark. Good morning, Rich. I hope you both chime in on my – listen, everything that you've talked to about, Curtis, is a socioeconomic problem. It not only affects our economy, it affects our society. What you talked about is, to me, the genesis of the collapse of the American family. And that therein lies the root of just about every problem that we have. But let me make one point about opioids. When America faces, when the press faces the opioid dilemma, they talk about how all these poor people were misprescribed and they were given painkillers and it drove them to heroin, and oh my gosh, we feel so sorry for them and what can society do for them? Yet when this country and the press face crack cocaine, it's what laws can we make that will put these son of a guns in jail? There's absolutely no sympathy. It's almost a racial issue in and of itself to me, because they're so unfair in their balance. Opioids, white man problem, I feel so sorry for you. Crack cocaine, a black man problem. Let's write stiffer laws to get them in jail for longer times. It's we need to address that, and we absolutely refuse to do that. Curtis, I think the reason that the Fair Trade Act was passed in 1914 was to create those antitrust laws, that generated or at least regulated the conduct of organizations, of business corporations, and generally to promote fair competition in the world, but mostly in this country. You know, mm-hmm. I think Robinson-Patman was the act that they passed, and I didn't come prepared for this. The only reason I know about antitrust laws is because I worked for an oil company for 25 years, and we were also always defending ourselves against them. But the fact of the matter is we have antitrust laws. Where I think the disconnect is, we're having a hard time drawing a correlation and coming up with a corrective direction for the collapse of manufacturing in this country, the introduction of technology, and the slippery slope that we put ourselves in if we refuse to become a part of a global economy. So you can put tariffs on these countries, and all it's going to do is tee them off to a point that they say, okay, if that's the way you want it, then we'll put tariffs on all our stuff. And it turns into a trade war. And I don't think anything gets accomplished like that. We cannot totally disregard the fact that we now exist in a world economy. And what we have to do... Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I hear what you're saying. We've always existed in a world economy. This past Monday, we celebrated something called Columbus Day. Columbus did not sail to the New World looking for palm trees and a sandals all-inclusive resort. He came here looking for trade. He came here looking for trade routes to the east, because the Muslim takeover of Constantinople and the constant harassment of traders on the Silk Road in Central Asia by Muslim marauders caused the Queen of Spain to look for a new route to the east that bypassed the fall of Constantinople, now known as Istanbul. And it was all about trade. You go back to the 1920s, that was a high point of world trade. You go back, the transatlantic cable, telegraph cable laid under the Atlantic Ocean, shrunk the world. We've always been a global economy. There's nothing new about that. The Patman Antitrust Act and the laws passed in the early progressive era were about eliminating unfair competition. All that's changed now is the unfair competition comes from overseas. It doesn't come from John D. Rockefeller anymore. So we're facing the same forces that we've always faced. Now we have an academic and governing elite that doesn't see itself as American anymore. They see their interests as global. They call themselves global citizens. They have a big festival up here in Central Park every year. The Global Citizen Festival, the Hollywood elites, the people that control the media, they identify with the people they share the first-class cabin with at 38,000 feet as they fly to Davos, or they go to their country house in St. Bart's, or their classmates in Harvard, which are the sons and daughters of the Communist Party elite of China, the people they sell their condos to, who are fleeing the tax laws of France and elsewhere. That's who they identify with. They identify with the elitists they went to school with in the Ivy League. They don't identify with the American people. They identify with their cohort, which are in the C-suites and the corner suites of the global corporations. And they see themselves, the central organizing principle of the world as they see it is not the nation state. It's the corporation. It's the global corporation. This is the managerial revolution that James Burnham wrote about in 1948, and it's still going on. We don't have capitalism to a large part in this country anymore. We have corporatism. How many people actually own property? A smaller and smaller number actually own property. And property is the basis. Private property was the basis of this country. So not to go off on that tangent, but we've always had a global economy. The question is, what are the rules of the global economy? One of the comparative advantages of the United States was respect for private property, respect for rule of law and contract law. So now these global corporations that are American in name only, they want to invest in other countries, but they're afraid that the legal system in those countries might discriminate against them, might actually expropriate their property. So what do? They write into these so-called trade deals something called investor dispute settlement courts. They create international tribunals that will adjudicate any claims under the expropriation of property. Well, there used to be something to deal with that. I mean, there's always been something to deal with that threat. It's called insurance. If you're so darn hell-bent on investing in another country and you're afraid that the government there might take your factory away, you can buy insurance to protect against that. But no, they don't want to buy insurance. Instead, they have the U.S. Trade Representative and the U.S. government, paid for with your and my dollars, my tax dollars, pays these guys' salary, have them negotiate a system of international courts that will provide the same rule of law and respect for private property and contracts anywhere in the world that we have built up in this country over the past 200 years, or in English common law, for the past 500 years. My question to you is, why should the U.S. taxpayers be subsidizing these corporations by creating a world court that they can take their claims to? Excuse me, if you're worried about your property being taken away, invest in the United States of America, where we have laws against that.
Well said. Wow. You know, Curtis, there's something been on my mind, and I've mentioned it many times. Every trade agreement that America made in the last 30 years should be reviewed, put on the table for every American to see. How are we benefiting? They keep saying we're benefiting as much by the people importing as we are exporting. What exactly are we exporting? When I look at the debt clock, and there are only 12 million people working in manufacturing, what exactly are we exporting is the question. Are those boats, as they say, the ships coming in low because they're filled with products and leaving high because the containers are empty? Something has to be reviewed with this thing. And yet many of those companies are sending back the products with the same beautiful packaging. You would never know the difference until you look at the labeling and see that it's made foreign.
Or check the quality.
Or check the quality. And you know, it's all this kind of stuff. And yet we're pulled by the mass media in 1,000 directions. This one said that. This one did this. Nobody puts their time and effort to address the actual needs of the country. What is causing poverty? Lack of jobs. What is causing so much of our human service issues, our mental health issues? People have nothing to wake up to go to in the morning.
No, I don't disagree with that. And I don't, you know, ultimately disagree with what Curtis said. You know, yes, we've had a global economy since there was a globe, which goes back to the beginning of time. But the fact of the matter is, I can contact a factory in Seoul, Korea, and I can send them via a fax, which will arrive in minutes, a 3D drawing of a part that I want manufactured. They can produce that part, and via FedEx and all of the rest of it, I can have that part 2 days later. That's a different kind of global economy. I mean, and I agree that there's a quality issue involved, and I agree that there's also a timing issue.
But, you know? Larkin, there's a question I'll pose here. Is there a company in the United States of America that you could have even considered?
For that specific project? I don't know. My son announced yesterday that he was going to work for a plastic injection company, and it getting completely away from the companies with now, and going in a different route. And they gave, you know, it's a really, really sweet job. But as I started to investigate it, it's a British company.
Right.
Well, it's fine if it's a British company on our soil, no problem. At least our workers are employed.
Right.
Oh, I mean, we are a global economy. We have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of companies from all over the world. I know firsthand many of them. But I don't like the idea, as I mentioned earlier, when I went over to pick up my granddaughter's newest books, everything is printed in China. That I don't understand. When America has so many people out of jobs, we have listed on the debt clock 94 million people not in the workforce, mainly because they're the people who would be in colleges, people who went out of the market to have a child, people who are unable to be employed because there's no job that is welcoming them. 94 million, and yes, we're saying that there is some drop in the unemployment rate. However, Where are we going to have to go to get those 94 million back in the workforce? Okay, Rich Logis, I know you are there and ready to speak.
Well, guys, good morning. And Curtis, thank you so much for coming back on. Sorry I missed last week. And just as a heads up for our listeners, if you hear a wailing, crying scream in the background, it's because I'm doing a Mr. Mom thing today. So if Isabella gets up, don't worry, you'll hear her. And our audio engineer, Henry, is going to need to definitely mute her out because she'll just take over the show.
No, Rich, we're not going to mute her out. We want her on the show because you know why? Because we're doing it for Isabella and little Gabriella and all these people. We're trying to change the future of America. Yes, Richard.
Well, you know, Michael, I think I've got a prediction, and I don't like the prediction business. You know, Curtis, right? We don't typically like that business, but I've got a pretty good track record on this show. You know, I'm on public record during the primaries saying there was only one candidate who could win. I'm on record from this show predicting accurately the outcome of the election. And now I'm going to make another prediction, guys, that I think we're going to like. And it comes back to the bumper sticker that Larkin often cites, re-elect no one. The people right now, the politicians who are most frightened right now, Curtis, in the country, are not Democrats, establishment Republicans.
Right.
And the reason they are is because they know that President Trump will be president for 8 years maximum. But it's the brand of politics that the establishment GOP knows they're coming up against. Now, what's the brand of politics? The brand of politics is Americans and American workers first, smaller government, more money in our pockets, take the kick me sign off of America's back, right? Kind of just to summarize it a little bit. And so right now, Curtis, I think by the time we get to the midterms next year, and by the time we roll around to 2020, there are going to be primary challenges all across the country against the establishment Republicans. And they know it.
Yeah.
They know that.
Amen.
They know it's happening.
I'm looking, I agree with you. I'm looking right now at a story online where one of the top GOP donors, Dan Eberhardt, an oil man and financier who's contributed to the Republican Party and Republican candidates for years, he's saying exactly the same thing you're saying. And as anybody who watched Sean Hannity on Fox News the other night, or maybe watched 60 Minutes a couple of weeks ago, you have a man named Steve Bannon, worked in the White House. Now he's out of the White House, and he is working to make your prediction come true. He is putting together a slate of candidates that will challenge the GOP establishment candidates, the senators and the congressmen, because he says it's time for a new party. It's time that the Republican Party, or any party, look, let's at least have one party in this country that looks out for working Americans, that looks out for American businesses, that looks out for Main Street instead of Wall Street. Right now we have two parties in this country that are really one party. They're both financed by the same big money interests, the same globalist interests, the people who, as I said before, identify with their friends in Davos more than they identify with the folks down the street that their kids in an earlier generation would go to school with. Now they send their kids to private schools in, you know, somewhere, France or Switzerland, or and they don't give a hoot about this country. They're too sophisticated for that. Patriotism, in their view, is for suckers. Well, it's about time we had a political party in this country that cared about this country. As Donald Trump said, I am president of the United States. I am not president of the world.
You know, and if you doubt Bannon, please be guided that he's one for one so far. he's only stepped up to one challenge, and he resoundingly won that challenge. And, well, Obama, and
he also got behind President Trump, and he won that. So maybe he's two for two. But
Yeah, right. That's a good point.
Well, Bannon is the guy, Curtis, I mentioned a few weeks ago where I complimented you guys, and I called you the Freddy Kruegers of politics, because it's astounding to see how much – see, anyone – this is why I said I really envy him, not in a jealous way, but in a respectful way. Like, anyone who lives so rent-free in the minds of the Democrats, the Republicrats, and the D-Mike – you know that they're doing something right. See, that's always the telltale sign. Just like in the election leading up to it, you know, leading up to the entire thing. And you know, maybe part of my predictions, Curtis, were like really wishful thinking, because I just will go to my grave believing that a Clinton election would have resulted in a Democrat empire across America. Just like you've got Democrat empires in all of these inner cities, right? From Chicago to Baltimore, Detroit to Philly to Newark to Oakland. And then, you know, the other side of that coin, the San Franciscos and New Yorks, where no one can afford to live there if you make anything under $7 million a year.
Right.
So anywhere they've got an empire. So the Clinton election was just going to usher in that empire. And as a business owner, economy's always been number one for me, Curtis, but this was an election that was a little different for me in the sense that 1A was the Supreme Court, because the way that the Democrat empire would have been ushered in would have been through the Supreme Court. We know that's a constitutional amendment. That requires, like, work. Who wants to do that?
That's right.
We'll just push an executive order through so we could get five or more judicial progressive activists to say, well, they're here already. Let's give them citizenship. Let's just give them the citizenship and the right to vote. Now, immigration's an issue we could talk about all day long, and it has to be talked about. And here's why it's going to be talked about, Curtis, because the challengers to the GOP, Republicrats, and establishment – see, those the kinds of candidates who are going to oppose, like we saw in Alabama with Luther Strange, right? You're talking about the one for one being Roy Moore, who came in, and Roy Moore is probably going to win that election next year. Well, that's going to be happening all across the country. So the Paul Ryan and John McCain and Mitch McConnell wing. This is why I've said it before. I'll bet every penny of future earnings that if I could take a lie detector test of congressional GOPers, 80% of them voted for Clinton on Election Day. So they can keep up the dog and pony show of being the so-called loyal opposition.
That's right. Yeah, you're right. I worked on Capitol Hill. There is no easier job in the world than to be a member of the House of Representatives in the minority. You don't have, unlike the Senate, in the House of Representatives, you have no power if you're in the minority. You cannot propose legislation. You can propose it, but you can't get it on the calendar. You can't get it voted for. You can't do anything. You just sit there, and you can put out press releases, say, I am the loyal opposition. I'm fighting those no-good SOBs that are, you know, running the show here. And that's all you have to do. And you go back home, and you get reelected. And you can go on junkets all day long because you can't do anything. That is the easy. So these people love to keep us distracted with, I'm fighting those Democrats, or I'm fighting those Republicans, when they're really doing nothing. And what we saw in Alabama is people give money. Okay, so the parties send out these email, or they send out their fundraising pitches saying, give us money and we will fight those evil Democrats. And so people send their money to the Republican National Committee. They send their money to this, you know, Republican Senate Committee. And what does the Republican Senate Committee do? They use that money to fight other Republicans. Right? It's like, we want to fight Roy Moore. We're going to fight this guy who's daring to mount a primary challenge against an incumbent. So they're really not fighting the other party. They're merely running an incumbent protection racket. That's what the parties are doing. And it's really, it's just a corrupt situation, and it's really terrible. And you're absolutely. I pray your prediction comes true. We're not supposed to pray for outcomes, but you know, from your lips to God's ear.
Let me tell you something. And having worked with many of the people in the Congress, you're absolutely right, guys. They are giving window dressing to us, lip service, all the bull you want, all the little citations we want, you know, for this event and that event. But absolutely no one is focused on communities, what's causing poverty, how are we going to get these people off food stamps and into a job that will at least give them some hope for the future. That's what I see in the last 9 months. We have more hope. We have people back thinking, I can be a success. I know it's going to be tougher than I ever thought. With that, I'm going to ask Mark Andel. Mark, you've been enjoying today.
Yes, I am. How you doing, guys? Welcome back, Curtis, Mike, Larkin. I hope Henry's not duct taped up there with the Eagles and the Steelers battle going on. I was worried about you, Henry. But, Rich, welcome, and all the listeners. Curtis, you know, from the beginning of the show listening, you hit it dead on. The system's been rigged. It's funny because I sent you guys, I think, Curtis, you might have got the email about Scott Paul, Alliance of American Manufacturing, standing up, saying steel's our strength. You know, I'm a steel guy with General Welding and Fabricating, and steel's our strength. And he's talking about, you know, China overproducing aluminum and steel and producing so much that they flooded the market, and exactly what you're talking about, Curtis.
Yep.
Basically are trying to, you know, put all the businesses that exist in the United States out of business, and then they control that market. So you hit it on the nail on the head. You know, if it's Whirlpool, whatever they're doing it with, it's been a system. But right now, Scott Paul's pushing the president and basically asking him to stand up to the word that he said he'll definitely go after unfairly traded imports that continue to flood our shores and threaten American manufacturers. So I think that's a big, big part going on right now. And Scott Paul's been great. Mike, you've had him on the show. Alliance of American Manufacturing is based out of Washington, D.C. Every mill, steel mill in the country pays a percentage of their tonnage. And China's been, you know, making billions of tons of steel, just flooding that market. So that's huge. I think you're dead on, you know, Curtis and Larkin, you know, saying the breakdown of the family, of course. You know, my question to the show today, I guess, I live and breathe this, so I see all these buses. We have 40 buses. We're going to hit our 700th bus next week. And these buses are America. It's the original old school America. They got jeans on. I always say no tattoos and earrings. They, you know, they're farmers. They serve the country. And they've been talking about what we've been talking about, really, but I see it right from them. They don't know what's going on, why it's a cultural change. And I think, Curtis, you really hit on that. It's a cultural change, and we have to fix it or else it creates all these other problems, given handouts and these people don't have a place to work. I always believe that the Made in America movement, the Made in America goal, would fix 90% of our problems by putting people back to work, giving them a drive, ambition, and allowing them to earn something. And really, it's neat to work. It's neat to earn your own keep and live your dream or the American dream, whatever you would like. My question to the show was, you know, basically, if you had control over the media, what would you ask our media to cover the news stations? How could they do a better job to help this country? Show more teamwork. And I mean, you watch the news and just how they're one-sided. I think Trump did a great job of exposing how crooked or how the media can just drive the feelings and the climate of the country. What would you like more if you had your dream, the Walt Disney World news channel, guys?
Well, I would like to see more coverage, as I said before, some of the root causes of, like, the opioid epidemic. Look, I remember back in the 70s when the heroin epidemic was in the inner cities, and people made no bones about it. The media said, well, you know, people are hopeless, there are no jobs, there's no opportunity, that's why they've turned to drugs and why they're all, you know, selling dope and using dope and shooting dope. Well, now we've got the same thing going on, but nobody talks about the hopelessness and the deindustrialization. I'd like to see an honest discussion of the effect of the massive, massive influx of low-skilled immigrants into this country, the effect that has on the low-skill sector, right? The people who are at the bottom rung of the ladder of economic opportunity. the people with few skills, no skills, like my late Uncle Russ. I remember in the 1960s, Uncle Russ was a dishwasher in the diner in New Jersey. That's all he could do. I mean, he had some emotional problems, and you know, but he had a job. He had a job washing dishes. Well, now you go into the kitchen of any restaurant in America, you're going to find a Mexican washer or a Salvadoran or a Guatemalan washing dishes. When I was a kid, I worked for $1 an hour at the snack bar at the in the summer, $1 an hour at the snack bar at the beach, at the local lake. And that was my first job. I learned to show up on time. I learned, you know, work hard, get paid. I took those dollars home and I, you know, bought something, bought a gift for my mother on her birthday, whatever. Now, and used to mow lawns. Now, the lawns are being mowed by Mexicans, Salvadorans. Where are kids learning the value of work, learning the that? So I'm getting off on a tangent. Let's have the media talk about some of these cultural issues. Now it's very interesting, your question. What Michael opened up, the storybooks are now printed in other countries. This gets to another issue. We're all hearing about Harvey Weinstein, right?
Yeah.
Well, let's look at our movie industry. The Chinese own Red China owns the largest movie chain in America, movie theater chain in America. It's kind of, for a little sidelight, they broke up the Hollywood movies were accused of trust of monopoly practices when they owned movie theaters because they could make the movies, they had the houses that distributed the movies. Anyway, they broke that up. Well, now the Chinese own the movie theaters. Hollywood makes movies that will sell in China and will sell overseas because that's where the money is. That's where the market is. So what happened to American values? Well, we don't want to offend the Chinese communist dictators, so we're not going to talk about the power of free speech. We're not going to talk about our cultural values so much. Instead, we'll have giant robots that blow things up and people that blow up the giant robots. That's what we're going to make movies about now. And, you know, so there's I would like to see the mainstream media, and they're never going to do this because they're owned by the same people that are trying to sell their shows over in China. I'd like to see the mainstream media talk about what does it mean to be American? Yeah. What? Don't talk about universal values. Let's talk about Western values. Let's not talk about the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Let's talk about Western civilization. And what does that mean? How did all of this stuff that we just take for granted, like freedom of speech and women being able to work and drive and show their legs if they want without getting stoned, how did that come about?
Well, and Curtis, I love America. I eat steak and I go to the men's room, but, you know, I'm a strange guy these days.
Well, you know, Curtis, that's actually that's wow, good one, Mark. That's a funny one. You know, Curtis, that point is so important because, you know, Michael, every time you mention media, it's so important to reiterate to our listeners that so much of the legacy D-Mike, so much of the legacy Democrat media industrial complex is actually crafted and concocted by the Hollyweird industrial complex. Now, there are exceptions to that, such as the New York Times and the Washington Post, which are, as I call them, Curtis, billionaire blogs. That's what they are. These are just billionaires who decided to buy newspapers to be anti-Democrat. And I, as a former journalist, I'm a little bit more ominous, Mark, about your question, because I think the distrust in so much of the D-Mike legacy media, I think the distrust is so deep that if today, if Viacom and News Corp and Disney and Time Warner and Comcast all announced that they were cleaning house to bring in actual attack dog but fair journalists, I don't think, Curtis, people like us would really care or believe them. I just think that this trust is so deep right now, especially post-2016 election,
that these guys really dug their own grave.
Well, I hope so. People shouldn't be distrustful of the media. You really shouldn't believe what these people tell you, no matter who they are, even if you're reading your favorite conservative news outlet. I want everyone to think critically and to, you know, double-check this stuff. You know, that's really not asking too much. Why are we trained to believe what we hear on TV or believe what we read in the paper? These are written by people, created by people who are just as fallible and flawed and put their pants on one leg at a time. You know, they're not any smarter than you and me.
You know, I was a journalism major in college, and that's as close as I got to a career in journalism. But we learned, you know, the seven tenets, who, what, when, where, why. And we used to, in one of my journalism classes, printed journalism classes, take the Nashville Tennessean, the New Orleans Picayune, I think it is. There were about five American newspapers, and we took them and tore them apart to talk about the reporting and, you know, were they actually, did they have a journalistic quality to them? And back then, as I recall, if you opined on any subject, it was on the opinion page.
Mm-hmm.
And the other day I was saying to somebody in my life, they said, here's the Sunday Times. And I said, why would you give me that? I don't have any birds. I don't have any cages to line. I mean, I don't. What, and he's. Oh, I absolutely despise the New York Times. But I said, I can't even get by the front page.
Yeah.
Because in the first paragraph of any story, regardless of whether it's about Trump or Puerto Rico or whatever it's about, without learning the opinion of the writer.
Yeah.
And that's not what I want.
Yeah, that's right. You know, we ought to train our kids, train everybody to read, how to read these papers so you can discern the opinion of the writer. It's there. Now it's there as clear as a bell. But that's how we should be taught to read. Tell me, what is the opinion? What are the assumptions and the premises from which this writer is proceeding when he writes this? And you can actually find it in everything that's written. It all proceeds from premises. And we have to unmask them, uncover them. That's critical thinking. That's critical reading. And it's sorely lacking. I wanted to, if I may, I wanted to give an update. Last week we were talking about the Monroe Energy. There was going to be an event, a demonstration at the Monroe Energy Refinery down there by Marcus Hook. And it happened this past Monday. Several hundred people came out for it despite the rains, the torrential rains that we all had in Philadelphia. And for all of those people who want to see bipartisan comedy, bipartisan, can't we all just get along? It happened. It happened. You had Republican and Democratic congressmen, and you had labor unions and business owners, and several hundred people there, and all these people from different parties coming together, all saying, we got to fix this situation where the independent refiners like Monroe Energy and Philadelphia Energy Solutions are not being held hostage and being forced to buy these paper biofuel credits that are being sold by Wall Street and the giant global oil corporations. And so the demonstration, you might say, was a success. It's not a success until they change the rules over at the Environmental Protection Administration, over at EPA. But a lot of people came in, and thanks to you guys, you were this radio show was telling everybody about it and promoting it. And you can pat yourselves on the back, but please don't throw your back out while you're doing that.
Right. Well, I'm so fat, Curtis, I sprain my elbow every time I try to reach around and pat myself on.
You know, this was a really great broadcast today. Curtis, you have to be back. I mean, we are discussing important things, and that is why people who get our rebroadcasts are now even sending it out to their family and friends, because we're talking common sense. And common sense, as Mark Andel says, he can't buy common sense. It has to be learned.
Michael, can I ask a question
in anticipation of next week for our listeners to think about? And this is a serious question. I want to ask our listeners to get their input. We need people to call in next week, Michael, because the question I have is, who's had a worse year, the NFL or Democrats?
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Serious question. Serious. I'm being serious. I'm looking at it from a business owner's perspective, not political. Who's had a – we need people to call in next week and say NFL has, and people say, no, Democrats have. And tell Tim back at the studio to get that mute button ready.
Who do both of them need? Customers, right?
They need customers. They need, you know, I think that we really stirred the hornet's nest up, but the American people like it. And they want to see America come back to life. There's nothing more disturbing than to see your son or daughter, your sister or brother out of a job. They have, some of these people have great educational backgrounds, but no place to go, whether it's in research and technology, inventing new products, you know, improving things that are in the system now, or it, on the line, making the products, selling them, delivering, advertising. How can we have those jobs back in America? Yep. Number one, support the companies that are here. And number two, speak up to your elected officials and tell them you want to review all the trade agreements that America has made over the last 50 years. And let's get this thing straight once and for all.
Yeah, and Mike, I can't let a show go by without asking for skilled workers, help and support. Again, we've got our school going now. We start on Saturdays. I've seen some great, young, enthusiastic kids. I tell them, stay hungry, never quit. And we just always have to support and get these in our school systems. And really, for parents out there listening, and let your kids get into the skilled trades if that's their passion. You'll never starve.
Let me tell you, by looking at the debt clock, we have 50 million young people in our public schools. Where better to start influencing them to have a future?
And are you going to hire an entry-level 14-year-old for a $15 an hour job in a McDonald's in San Francisco?
Well, we have to stop all these types of things and let people work themselves up the ladder. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for tuning in. You will receive a rebroadcast of the program today. We have to put all the issues on the table. I only hope that the major media takes our example. My thanks to Curtis Ellis. We're depending on you to be back very soon. Larkin Conley, Mark Andel, and Rich Logis, Henry Chaplinsky, thank all of you, because America needs us. Until this Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday at 11 here on 860, keep asking the question, is it American made? Thank you, guys.
Have a great week, guys.
Everybody have a great week.
Thanks, everyone.